Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
It has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on
a big stop! Oh, brother!
Lead Toledo Artis. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann, and with me as usual is Rich Kraich. Rich, great to be back with you.
Absolutely. I'm excited. Let's do this.
Yes, we are continuing our WrestleMania series, talking about the Celtics playoff battles with Wilt Chamberlain and the Philadelphia Warriors. Well, then eventually San Francisco Warriors. We'll get into that. But they battled in 1958, 1960, 1962, and 64. So every other year they were battling at it. The Warriors, before the Celtics won the championship in 57 and began that dynasty, that the 11 out of 13 championship dynasty, the Warriors had been the previous champion in 1956, and they were led by Paul Arizin, who was a jump shot pioneer and one of the great players of his day. Basically, he became a jump shot pioneer because he would play on very slippery dance floors early on. So when he tried to do a hook shot, his foot would go out from under him. It worked out better for him to jump and didn't have to worry about slipping. And the more they did, the better he became. And eventually, before he knew it, all of his shots were a jump shot. So that from an NBA.com profile talking about him. So that's necessity being the mother of invention and all that good stuff. He was the third player to score 15,000 points, and he missed two seasons for being in the Marines. So he probably likely would have been the first to score 20,000 if it had been for that. He was described as a great leaper, a slick ball handler, and a tough defender. An NBA.com profile calls him sort of an early version of Michael Jordan or Sidney Moncrief, which, of course, is a compliment, especially for Jordan. But, he was certainly he was one of the, probably the top five players of the 1950s. So that's, high praise as well. He was the first player with nine straight 20 points per game season. And as a 6'4", a small forward, he was the shortest player to average eight rebounds for his career. That's from Curtis Harris at Pro Hoops History, who also argues that he would have been the best choice for NBA MVP in 1952 if one had existed. He also made three All-NBA first teams and one second team. The other Warriors 50 standout was Neil Johnston, who was a great scoring center who made four All-NBA first teams and one second team. He led the league in scoring three times and led in win shares five times, but he was forced to retire at age 29, 1959, because of injury, and was third in win shares and in win shares 48 for the entire decade of the 50s. So I think he's sort of kind of the most forgotten player out of this era. And then,
yeah, you really don't hear anything about him. I mean, very other than if it's coming from Curtis or us or, some people that are really doing intense research. But yeah, he's not a name that would arise, most ever in conversation.
Yes. And both players led them to a championship in 56 against the Fort Wayne Pistons. So they won that series four games to one. Arizin, he averaged about 29 points per game during the playoffs, including an Eastern Division Finals victory against Syracuse, where he scored 35 points in the clinching game of that series. So, and he had 26 or more points, between 26 and 30 points in all five games of the finals. So a good performer. And the first time that the Warriors and Celtics battled in the playoffs in the Russell era was in 1958. This was actually this was before Wilt came along, so not yet the Wilt Russell rivalry, but the Celtics were 49-23, the Warriors were 37-35. The Celtics had won the championship previously in 57, of course. The Warriors beat the Nationals 2-1 in the playoff series. The Celtics, of course, were led by Bill Russell, Bob Cousy, Bill Sharman, Jack Ramsey, Tom Heinsohn. They also had their only season of big minutes from Lou Cyropoulos, who recently passed away. We talked about him just a little bit when he passed away.
Yeah.
And this was also the last season for Jack Nichols, who had been a kind of a longtime Celtic, as well as Andy Phillip and Arnie Risen, who were veterans who had kind of gone along for the ring. This was also the first year for Sam Jones. And the key Warriors were Paul Arizin, Neil Johnston, and Tom Gola, who had returned from after a year in the military, was like a really good, versatile defender and playmaker. You could think of him a little bit as the Draymond Green of his day. That was kind of the style of player that he was, kind of that do everything, tough, you know, could defend guys who were bigger than him, that kind of thing. Other key guys were Joe Grabowski, Jack George, Ernie Beck, George Dempsey, and Walt Davis. And all the guys that we mentioned actually were on the 56 title team, so they had a lot of stability. The only real new guy on the team was Woody Saltzberry, who was actually the rookie of the year this year. And he was a good player, but really just battled like a horrible amount of discrimination and stops in Philly, and then especially in St. Louis, and then in Chicago before he was able to win the championship with the 66 Celtics. There's a really good article from the Baltimore City paper, which if you Google Woody Saltzberry Baltimore City paper, you'll find it. And it just kind of really details just all the obstacles that he had to go through in, just dealing with racism from teammates, from fans, and all that kind of stuff. And, you can obviously be aware of it, but just to kind of viscerally like see just everything that he had to go with, and getting that perspective from a guy who, was a good player, but not like an all-time great, but just, we know about it from Russell. We know about it from other guys, but to kind of see it from a guy who wasn't really that well known is illuminating. And it definitely could have been a different career for him if he hadn't done that. So,
and it's a tough story to read too, because he's gone through a lot of issues in his actual personal life as well, and battled like different health issues and stuff. So it's interesting, and it's definitely worth reading. But yeah, it's not the most happy go-lucky.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult story. There's not much not much heartwarming about it, unfortunately. So so this series the Celtics won it 4-1. What were some of the key things that happened in the series?
Yeah, so of course, in King of the Court, the very, very, very awesome Bill Russell biography that we've talked about many times throughout this series that you should definitely read if you haven't already decided to do it already. But Russell suffered tonsillitis and had headaches, so he was really, really under the weather. But still had 18 and 25 in Game 1, and then he also had 28 rebounds in Game 2 and 40 in Game 3. So despite being under the weather, it did not matter. He was still pretty good. So Coach George Senensky, he was forced to bench Neil Johnson, the team leader in win shares total. Boston won Games 1 through 3 pretty handily. The Warriors took Game 4 in Philly, but the Celtics then won Game 5 in Boston, 93-88. Sharman led with 28 points per game, 20.8 points per game, rather, and Heinsohn had 19.2. Paul Arizin, he had 24 points per game, and Johnson was held to only 13.2, which is way down from his season average of 19.5. Yes. So definitely were able to stop Neil Johnson there a little bit. Arizin had his game, but yeah, it was pretty well. Boston was the better team, and it wasn't really even that close.
No, definitely not. Yeah, and we talked about it a little bit or in one of the earlier shows. So basically, Neil Johnson was this great player in this early days, and then once Russell came along, he just was really embarrassed him, and basically again forced them to bench one of their best players because he just couldn't handle Russell, and Russell was obviously another level athletically, and as a guy who understood the defense and blocking shots and all that good stuff. So as we've talked about many times about the greatness of Bill Russell, but you can't talk about enough because he was really awesome. So the 1960 Eastern Division Finals, this was the first Wilt Russell series. The Celtics won it 4-2. Wilt and Russell, as we mentioned, played 8 times, Russell's team winning 7 times, and 4 of these series went to a Game 7. The records for this, Boston 59-16, the Warriors 49-26. The Warriors had beaten the Nationals 2-1. Heading into this, the Celtics had gotten a bye, as they usually would. The Celtics were led by Russell, Cousy, Heinsohn, Ramsey, Sharman, and Sam Jones. Usual crew by then. They also had a backup big, Gene Conley, who we mentioned before was also a major league pitcher. Casey Jones, who was Russell's University of San Francisco roommate and a great defender. And reserve small forward Gene Gorelia, who played four seasons with the Celtics, never really getting that many minutes for the most part in his career. Meanwhile, the Warriors were led by veterans Gola, Arizin, Salisbury, Grabowski, and Beck, who all were on the 56 team. So 6 years later, or excuse me, 4 years later, they're still on the team. They also have Guy Rogers, who we mentioned is a point guard in our previous show, who was a future Hall of Famer, although has the lowest amount of win shares for any Hall of Fame player that we have the numbers for. Also reserves Andy Johnson and Vern Hatton were on the team. But, of course, the big new player was Wilt Chamberlain, who this year won both MVP and Rookie of the Year. He averaged 37.6 points per game and 27 rebounds per game. Were both at the time were NBA records that each of them he would later exceed. So rebounds he did not exceed by much. Of course, points per game he would exceed by a little.
Yeah. Just the slimmest of margins. This team was also coached by Johnson as well. Neil Johnson, but he clashed badly with Wilt. Yeah, definitely did not get along very well with
his new
leader and new best player. So that's all right.
Right. So. And this was actually very, a pretty tight series. There were four games of 8 points or fewer, and actually three of those were won by Boston, which up until this point, a lot of the series, actually Boston lost the close games, but in this case, Boston won most of the close games. And Heinsohn averaged 21.2 points per game. Russell had 20.7 points per game. Chamberlain averaged 30.5, and Arizin averaged 24.2. So what were some of the highlights of this series?
Yeah, some other stuff. Tommy Heinsohn, he averaged 21.2 points per game. Bill Russell had 20.7, which is actually – oh, sorry.
I actually went through the scoring.
Did you say that? I swear you didn't. I'm listening. I swear I'm listening. I'll delete this part. Which part did you stop at? I've been sitting there.
I said Chamberlain and then Arizin averaged the numbers and then.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I didn't do a very good job of transitioning to like the bullet point. No problem.
I wasn't sure. I heard the Chamberlain part, but I guess
it's all right. Okay. It's been a long day. It's all good.
Yep. All right. All right. So Boston, they won game one, 111-105. During game two, Red Auerbach instructed Tommy Heinsohn to stand in Wilt's way after the Warriors scored, preventing him from getting back to defend while Russell rushed back for an open shot, which probably led to his high scoring output. Eventually, Wilt lost his temper and they got in a fight, leading to Wilt to throw a punch for the first time in his career. This led, of course, to a big melee. He accidentally hit Tom Gola. Johnny Most, who we've talked about a few times in the series, he says, believe it or not, the Stilts punches are even less accurate than his free throw shooting. Ooh.
Burn.
Ow. Wow.
Yeah.
Lay into it. And then Wilt injured his hand, but the Warriors, they won the game regardless. 115-110. Wilt was taken out of game three because of his hand injury, unfortunately. His x-rays revealed severe bruises, and the Celtics went on to win that game 120-90. And they went on to win game four 112-104. Wilt came back strong in game five. He scored 50. And the Warriors won 128-107, so they kind of got the series back on track. Game six in Philly, the score was tied 117-117. Guy Rogers missed two free throws. Boston got the ball back. Bill Sharman missed a jumper, but Heinsohn was able to barely tip it in with his fingertips for a buzzer beater, and the Celtics won 119-117. Russell in that game had 25 points. Wilt had 26. Rogers had a really good game with 31, and Salisbury had 26. And then after the game, Wilt tells journalist Ike Ellis that he's going to retire and later officially announces it before changing his mind weeks later, which that would have been very interesting to see how he would have actually reacted to that or what the NBA would have been like had he just said, you know what, I think I'm done. This is annoying. So, but unfortunately, things, yes. I don't know if their fortunes wouldn't really turn up right away. Be a little while.
Yeah,
but that's all right.
Yeah, well,
hang in there, Wilt. Hang in
right.
there.
Yeah. yeah. Well, I mean, Wilt certainly. I mean,
he was fine.
Yeah, he did all right, you know. But I get what you're saying. So, 1962, Eastern Division Finals, the Celtics winning 4-3. Celtics were 60-20. The Warriors were 49-31. The Warriors had beaten the Nationals again. They keep beating the Nationals, although again it was only an 18 league at this point. So I think maybe the 19 had been added this season. But either way, a small league, so you're going to be beating the same teams a lot. The Celtics, of course, had Russell, Sam Jones, who had replaced Bill Sharman as a starter who had retired. Heinsohn, Satch Sanders had been added to the team. Bob Cousy, Casey Jones, Ramsey and Lus Katafra, who still were contributors even though they were aging. Guard Gary Phillips, who one of the new players who actually would end up going to the Warriors the next season. And Carl Braun, who was in the final season of a very lengthy career that actually went back to the BAA, came over from the Knicks. So he was kind of, again, one of those guys who at the end of their career, the Knicks picked up and, would contribute there and, get the ring and have some fun there. The top Warriors, of course, from 2 years before, they had Chamberlain, Arizin, Rogers, and Gola. So those key players, but lost a lot of guys, obviously, from that. Al Addles, guard who was in his second year, was one of the toughest players in his day, as we mentioned in our previous show. He also had 55 plus years with the Warriors organization as a player, coach, and executive and advisor. All those things, longest affiliation with any NBA organization in history. The newbies were rookie Tom Asheri and Ed Conlin, who was a former National Piston who was in his final year. We talked about this. 62, of course, was the year where Wilt's 100-point game happened. So we talked about in the last show how the Warriors had hired Frank McGuire's coach, who tried a new approach with Wilt, saying that because after Wilt had bad relationships with his previous coaches, he said, the Warriors can beat Boston if Wilt averages 50 points a game. Wilt's response was 50. Nobody can average 50 game in this league, which is a story from the rivalry. And then, of course, Wilt, he ended up doing that and doing it very successfully.
Yep. Yeah. His lowest point total in the year, which I always find fascinating, was 26, which is like, any mortal, it's like 26 again, pretty good game, not bad. For Wilt, though, it was like so far and away his worst game of the year as well. So it's just funny how just an incredible year. If you ever get a chance, and we've talked about it too, but if you look at the game log and just really look at that season and what he was able to do, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fascinating of just what he was able to do and how good he was at scoring in that year. It's just, it's incredible.
And obviously we understand, pace and all that stuff, inflating some of those numbers, but that's still,
sure.
I mean, that so much energy and so much work to be able to to do that. I mean, it's just amazing.
Just exhaustion from just like every game. And we mentioned before in that World 100, I mean, he played every game. I mean, like all but like, what was it, 8 minutes or 6 or 8 minutes that he played the seat. I mean, he was in there every time, and it's not like he could take possessions off because the ball was in his hand. He'd walk down and boom, there's the ball. And like, just the exhaustion and just the energy that it took to do that, regardless of the pace, regardless of whatever. I mean, it's still just super, super impressive.
Yeah. So for the series, Heinsohn averaged 22.1 points. Russell had 22 points. Wilt had 33.6. Macheri had 21.6, and Arizin had 20.3. Life magazine at the time described Wilt Russell as the fiercest private war in sports today. So showing that, Wilt and Russell was getting, national attention as a big rivalry in sports and was adding more cachet to the NBA at the time. The Warriors starters actually outscored the Celtics starters for the series, but the benches were the key difference. Ramsey, Casey Jones, and Luskadoff outplayed Addles, Ed Conlin, and the Cobra, York Larisi. unfortunately, the teams traded wins at home in games 1-4. Boston won big in games 1 and 3, and Philly won close games in games 2 and 4. The home team actually won every game in the series, and this was back where you alternated the first 4 games of the series rather than 1 and 2 being the being one team and 3 and 4 being another team. So
yeah.
So you want to take it from game 5?
Yeah, so game five, Wilt and Sam Jones had an altercation, and this was not the first time that these two had kind of roughed each other up. Sam had a long history of antagonizing Wilt. Yeah. In this game, they collided and had angry words. Wilt chased him, and Sam grabbed a photographer's stool and threatened him, which has got to be just a fascinating video to watch. Guy Rogers then punched Carl Brown. That prompted a response from Loskutov, and then there was a melee. 200 fans stormed the court, but they were held back by police. Eventually, order was restored, thankfully, and then Boston ended up winning the game 119-104. But yeah, nice little, just a little, yes, you know, shove back and forth caused a big melee from all these
right
guys.
Right, and Sam and Wilt's relationship was less physical and more just Sam would try to get like under his skin and was
Sort of, no, like, I didn't mean like I mean like sort of rough each other up in terms of just, you know, mentally.
Yeah,
in a lot of
ways, and Sam would rile Wilt up, and then Russell would get mad at Sam for riling Wilt up because, you know, of course Russell would have to defend him, you know, for the most part. So it was mostly in fun, but you know, occasionally obviously things would you know, would get heated.
Game six, not too much here. The Warriors won 109-99. Then we go to a game seven, a big game seven. Of course, you probably know what happened here, but Russell, he scored 19 and 22 rebounds. Wilt only had 22 points. Sherry had 32 points, though. So he actually tops of the team with 16 seconds left. And the score tied at 107. Boston held for the final shot. Sam Jones, who had 28, swished a jumper and put Boston up 109-107. The Warriors angrily argued to no avail that the referees, that the Boston scorekeepers let the clock run too long after the shot connected, leaving them just 1 second on the clock instead of three. Philly inbounded the ball. Russell tipped the pass, and the game was over. Boston coach would, of course, Red Auerbach, you know, famous Red Auerbach, would chalk the discrepancy of the game to a malfunction. So he sort of just kind of shrugged it off. And this was unfortunately the final game, final NBA game for Paul Arizin, who would go on to the Eastern Pennsylvania Basketball League for a few years while working with IBM, which is just a fascinating, like, imagine that, a pretty decent guy still kind of in the peak of his career being like, you know what, I'm going to take a job with Google. So I'll play in like, a semi-pro league in like Santa Cruz, California or whatever, but I'm not going to leave the NBA. I don't really think I want to do this anymore, but just fascinating. But apparently, you know, he retired from the NBA. He wanted to stay near his Philadelphia home, you know, obviously just didn't want to leave his family too long. But yeah, he did pretty well. He led that club to a 1964 EBL title, and he was also named the MVP of the league in 1963. And then the Eastern Pennsylvania Basketball League eventually rebranded to the Eastern Basketball League, then into the more famous Continental Basketball Association, the old CBA. So it's kind of fun to see that lineage work its way through there. But yeah, I don't know. The Eastern Pennsylvania Basketball League, I feel like it's a little bit of a niche there.
It is.
I'm glad they were able to spread to the whole continent away from, you know, just Eastern Pennsylvania.
Right. So. I mean, they spread far, you know. Well, that's, you know, like Eastern Championship Wrestling becoming Extreme Championship Wrestling.
Exactly. Right. You're right.
Yeah. So,
we do way more wrestling references in this podcast. I don't think we do enough. That's our goal for the next 100 is to just like one per episode, just kind of a little dab in there. And then,
all right, I'll put you in charge of that, Rich.
Okay. Deal.
1964 finals, the final battle, of course, the first time between, the two teams in the finals, because the Warriors had gone to San Francisco, gone to the Western Conference after the 62 season. The fans did not really embrace the team. The team struggled in 1963 under coach Bob Feerick, who would later become the general manager and do a little better in that role. So Alex Hannum would then take over the Warriors, trying to restrain the team's Wilt scoring and play more of a team game. He kind of felt that the other teammates had become too dependent on Wilt. It's interesting that it was almost the opposite approach of Frank McGuire, although Wilt got along pretty well with each coach. Later, the relationship with Hannum would be a little bit strained, but that wouldn't be until they would be reunited again in Philadelphia. The records of the teams, Celtics were 59-21. The Warriors were 48-31. The Celtics had beaten the Royals 4-1. The Warriors had beaten the Hawks 4-3. The Hawks still in St. Louis. The veterans for the Celtics were Russell, John Havlicek, who had stepped up big in his second year on the team, although was still the sixth man. Casey and Sam Jones, Satch Sanders, Tom Heinsohn. It was the final seasons for Clyde LaViolette, Loskutov, and Frank Ramsey. And then newbies, Willie Nahls, also known as the Whale, who we talked about in the previous show, had been with the Knicks and had been a four-time All-Star. Actually played the previous season with the Warriors and now would finish his career with the Celtics. Larry Siegfried was also This was his rookie year. He had been a teammate of Havlicek's at Ohio State and then would later have a big role in the later Celtics teams. He didn't really play much this year. The Warriors, they still had Wilt, of course. They had Rodgers, Mascheri, and Adels from the 62 team, and they had lost Gola, Arizin, and Frank McGuire after the move. Those guys didn't want to necessarily move out to the West. Gola actually did stick around for a while, but he eventually was traded. They also had Wayne Hightower and Gary Phillips. Their main rookie was Nate Thurmond, of course, future Hall of Fame and top 50 player, great rebounder. And there's a lot to kind of how it would go as far as, you know, Thurmond's rise led the Warriors to have the ability to trade Wilt, which we can get into a little bit at the end here. But why don't you talk a little bit about the series?
Yes. So series, the averages, Bill Russell, he had sort of at this point let a little bit of the scoring load go to others and kind of, you know, obviously still a great rebounder, but 11.2 points per game, 25.2 rebounds per game. So he still was very, very important in that aspect. And then 5 assists per game as well, which, of course, is a huge part of Bill Russell's game. A lot of the scoring load had now gone to Sam Jones, who at 21.2 points per game, 4.4 rebounds per game, and 2.8 assists per game. But Sam Jones is a guy, in doing research for this, like, I always sort of appreciated him. But looking back and doing in this entire little playoff battles thing, I'm just seeing how important he was to the scoring there. And I don't know if he, I know he's, you know, obviously he's a Hall of Famer and gets, a lot of people do know of his contributions, but I don't know if enough. It's just a really, really awesome player when you really break it down and see what he was able to do in these playoff series as well. I mean, he always, in all these that I was doing research for, he just popped out as like, oh man, Sam Jones, you know, leading scorer, Sam Jones. And it wasn't even close a lot of times. I mean, he was just such a consistent scorer for them
as well. His ability to hit clutch shots too. I mean, he just.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he always comes up as a guy in those last few minutes that's hitting shots. It's crazy. I mean, he gets a ton of credit, of course, but I wonder if it's even not as much as he probably deserves. But Havlicek, he also had 18.4 points per game, 4.0 rebounds per game, and then 3.6 assists per game. Wilt had a nice little line, 29.2 points per game and 27.6. Mascheri had 16.4 points per game, 4.8 rebounds per game. And then Nate Thurmond, of course, as we mentioned, the rookie, he had 11.2 points per game and 13 rebounds per game. Russell had become a little bit more tired as usual during the playoffs. Of course, you mentioned you can look at his kind of scoring load and see he was dealing with strained hamstrings, pain in his Achilles, sore knees, and then even announced, and this is in the rivalry, he announced before the series began that he was thinking of maybe retiring as well. So you sort of see the obviously he had a few more good years in him, but you sort of see the, you know, he's starting to get there in age, and injuries are starting to pile up a little bit for him as well.
Yeah, he would also start to have more would be stressed out and would start to have more like insomnia and more the stress would kind of add up for him more. And of course, he was going to be coaching the team in a couple years. I mean, he was still an amazingly effective player for up until at least like through 68 or in 69 when he started slowing down. But yes, obviously he was aging a bit and getting close to 30, and it was getting harder. But it is interesting that he actually publicly announced that he had even thought about it. He didn't, obviously, but yeah. But the fact that he was even thinking about it and shared that with the press, I thought was interesting.
Absolutely. Games 1 and 2, we'll go through the series here a little bit. They're fairly easy for Boston win. They won both of the games. Nothing really big of note, except for game 2, which had a very famous Wilt Auerbach confrontation. And this is from the rivalry as well. Bill Russell tried to separate them, and he warned Red for his own safety. Get back, Red. You're about 6 inches too close. Then Wilt knocked Russell's hands from his shoulder, the first time they had ever gotten rough with each other. So that sort of was the first time there. Wilt later got into fights with Clyde Lovett, who had knocked out Wilt's two of Wilt's teeth in his rookie year. With about 25 seconds left, rather, Lovett nailed Wilt with an elbow, and Wilt punched him in the jaw, dropping him to his knees. Police ended up having to split up the teams. Auerbach wanted Wilt ejected, but they just called a technical, and Earl Strom, who's the author of that, says Red gets
he's referee, yeah.
Right, exactly, yeah. Red gets the stiff out. So he said, Red, get the stiff out of here so we can finish the game. Red continued to argue, and Wilt says, Red, if you don't shut up, I'm going to put you down there with Clyde. So that would have been very interesting to see just Wilt just cold clock and Red Auerbach. Like, imagine that. Like, jeez. Yeah. Like that.
And Russell and Red both kind of talked about that as a like that is it sort of a moment of like that kind of marked their friendship a little bit of like Russ like expressing like just concern for Red, just like his safety. It's like, okay, you do not want to go into this, you know, you want to chill out right here now. You don't want to, you know, I mean, I'll back you up here to a certain point, but you're in a scary situation. You need to be careful kind of thing. So
the Warriors, they followed that. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Warriors, they won a blowout in game three. Game four is close, but Boston won 98-95 in San Francisco. Game five, the Celtics win on Russell's tip-in off a Heinsohn shot. Russell was jumping past Wilt to get the ball. They won 105-99 to cap off the series. Wilt had 30 points. Russell had 14.
Yes. And then, as we mentioned, Wilt was traded to the 76ers, who had moved from Syracuse in midseason 65 after the Warriors got off to a terrible start. They had Nate Thurmond, who was, you know, pretty good replacement and was going to honestly be, you know, difficult guy to play with, you know, with Wilt. Not that you need spacing as much then, but, you know, you still I think Thurmond was better off as a center than as a power forward. At that time, Will was also dealing with health issues, including trouble with his pancreas, I believe, and then had some personality problems with the team owner, Franklin Muley, who was a bit of an eccentric and just didn't get along with Will so much. So he would be traded away, and the Warriors would end up doing okay by drafting Rick Barry and making another run to the finals in a couple seasons. But the divorce that was Wilt's first divorce from a franchise and wouldn't be the last, and won't be the last time that we talk about his teams facing off against.
No, he's not. We're not done with your Wilt yet. No. But we're unfortunately done with your Warriors.
Yes, we're done with the Warriors for now. So, anything else, Rich?
No, I believe that's it.
All right. Well, cool. Thanks, everyone, for checking us out. You can find us at hardwareparoxysm.com. We are on Twitter and Facebook by going at Over and Back NBA. We'd love it if you would leave a review for us on iTunes and Stitcher. That helps people get to know us and find us on the internet. If you know anybody who's into NBA history, you think they'd like our show, just go ahead and tell them. Just say, hey, this is Over and Back NBA History Podcast. It's pretty cool. You should check it out. And that's about it. Until next time, thanks for listening. We'll be back again soon.